Welcome back to TV Campfire Podcast. This is podcast number 5, and I'm your host, Libya. And this week we have two guests. The first is Josh. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm from North Hollywood.
And the second guest is Brian.
Hey, y'all. I'm Brian. I'm from L.A., but I'm currently at WonderCon in San Francisco.
Woohoo! All right. Let's start off with the news. This week in the news, I just found out that Gina Torres has been added to the cast of Huge, which is a drama, I think. It's about a weight loss camp for teens, and she plays Dr. Dorothy Rand. That's about all I know about that particular show. Also, in the bad news category, Alexis Denisov was on a show called Liars, and it just got picked up from the pilot, and they replaced him with Chad Lowe.
Oh, boo.
Yeah, I was like, hurt. I was like, crush. Oh, that really hurts. And the other thing is, Thursday was a really big night. A lot of new shows came back. But for some reason, it was a huge rating slump, like all the way across the board. Even the top rated shows, like CSI, all those shows, everything dropped. It was a huge drop in their ratings than normal. And Fringe was back from being away for months, and it came back to ratings that were 15% below what they were usually at. And even Bones, which is like Fox's big show, it was 30% lower than normal. Wow. So they don't know what the heck is going on, but apparently people are having secret meetings or something instead of watching television on Thursdays now.
Oh, how dare people do something other than watch television.
So
the revolution won't be televised.
Apparently. All right, go ahead. That's all the news that I have. Do you guys have anything?
I've got one tidbit of news for the show Modern Family. This past week, it won a Peabody Award, which I thought was really cool. Because I really enjoy the show, and I think it's a lot of fun, and it's good to see it get recognized.
Very well written, yeah, so I totally agree with you.
Oh, I just forgot. Castle got renewed for season 3.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
it did.
That's right. Good call.
You got any news from WonderCon?
There's like some other big news that happened this week, and I couldn't remember. Yes.
Yeah, that was another big news. No real news from WonderCon. I guess the big news is IDW is going to be publishing a new season of Buffy comics, Buffy season 9.
That's
kind of one piece of big news. I've mostly seen panels for movies mostly, like, you know, Prince of Persia, Sorcerer's Apprentice, Kick-Ass. And every panel I've been to has been very entertaining, and this is going to be a great summer for movies. I know we're talking about TV. But I also got to see Doctor Who, the new one, at a screening. They had 3 screenings, and they were all full of about 1,000 people. They actually added 2 because of the demand. And they actually had a little, you know, greeting. Matt Smith and I forget the girl's name, but they, you know, recorded a little greeting. Thank you. They recorded a little greeting for everyone in San Francisco, and it was adorable. and the episode was great. We can talk about that later, but the episode was great.
Oh, speaking of which, they're doing a similar thing in New York, where Matt Smith...
Yeah, they're going to be at the Paley.
But the Paley in New York.
Yeah, they're doing 2 events the week before it comes on BBC America in over in New York. One at the Paley, and there's another one. So, we hate people in New York right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
I had a very quick thought of, hey, I'm off this week. I could fly to New York. And then I was like, no.
Yeah. If it had been, like, David Tennant and Catherine Tate there, then yeah.
I had the same thought. I was like, I don't like Matt Smith that much yet.
I don't know Matt Smith that much yet.
Exactly. And I was like, I had the same thought. I was like, if it was David Tennant, I would be on a plane.
Oh, yeah,
but, yeah, I was like, Matt Smith, not yet. Maybe next season if they do this, then I'd fly to New York. Especially since I'm on vacation, and my entire plan was to go on vacation and go hang out and just, you know, drive up the coast or whatever. I was like, I could easily turn into going to New York. But, Matt Smith wasn't quite enough for me to change my plan. So...
Well. Hopefully the new season will change that. That's what I'm hoping for anyway.
I have a feeling it will, if the first episode is any indication.
Fantastic.
All right. I'm taking your word for it. So let's start off with Sunday for the Pacific.
Yes.
I this week for some reason totally forgot to watch it. So
that's a shame because this week's episode was really good.
All right, give me the brass nut. What's the term?
Brass tacks.
Thank you. That's where I was going for. Go ahead.
Okay.
The rundown.
The Pacific this week, we had the first two episodes that dealt primarily with the Battle of Guadalcanal, and at the end of the week before, that ended.
Right.
This week was all about them, all the soldiers, basically getting R&R in Melbourne, Australia.
Right.
And it was nice because it was a very different change of pace from the last two, which were pretty much all battle. And there's only so much you can do in that. And this, everybody was sort of like recovering and trying to get in touch with loved ones and having lots and lots of sex with Australian girls. And it was cool to see like all of them just sort of kick back and take stock of everything. And the one character whose name I cannot remember... not the one who's writing the girl who he met once outside of church and is now writing her constantly, which is a little bit creepy. But...
Yeah, Mr. Stalker guy. I met you one time and now you're my girl. Yeah.
Yeah. But the guy who ran to get the ammo, burned his arm, saved a couple guys, and at the end, William Sadler, the general, put him in for a medal.
Oh, yeah, I remember him. Yeah, he got him.
Well, this week he received the Medal of Honor, which was very cool, and he'd actually, like, gone out on, like, a big bender the night before.
Of course he did.
So he gets called into the general's office, and he's like, okay, congratulations, you've just won the Medal of Honor. What does he do? He throws up.
Oh. Brilliant.
But it was cool, and then, like, the general's telling him, okay, you've won the Medal of Honor, now you need to act like it. And after the ceremony, the general then tells him that they're having a hard time selling war bonds back in the States, so they want him to go back and basically be the poster boy for the American soldier, so they're taking him out of the war entirely.
Oh, that would suck for him.
Yeah, it was really disappointing. I was like, I like this guy. I'm hoping that we get to see, like, some of what goes on with him stateside.
The thing I like about the show is the change of pace and the characters, and it feels like this episode you really get to spend more time learning the characters versus watching really bloody battles, which, I mean, you know, that's what you had to see then, but
yeah,
I do like the change of pace aspect of it. All right.
It was a really good change of pace, and what I'm most interested in is seeing when Joe Mazzello's character comes in, because now that he's finally been cleared to join the army.
Oh, the guy with the heart murmur?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I was waiting for him to join the action. So, yeah, that'll be cool.
I knew it was going to happen because in the opening sequence, you see a shot of him in uniform in battle.
I don't think I remember that, but I knew that eventually that's where that storyline was going.
Yeah.
Let's move on real quick to, since we got like a million shows to go through.
Yeah.
24. This show used
to
be...
That's all I have to say.
This show used to be one of the greatest shows on television, and now it's like the most torturous show on television, and not in the good way, more in the...
Still watching every week.
Yes, it is a great effort, because today... It was literally the last show I was going to watch before this podcast, and I was trying to crank through it before the podcast, and I didn't make it. I got the gist of what was going on, and it's as bad as I thought it was going to be. I'm like, I don't understand why this season is struggling so hard to make a good story.
It really feels like they knew going in that this was going to be their last season, and they just don't give a crap anymore.
I didn't even think about it that way. That's a good explanation.
Like, because really, with Dana, Katie Sackhoff's character this week, I just wanted to punch her.
Yeah.
Like,
And I don't understand why people...
It could possibly be the stupidest thing a character has ever done on 24.
Well, my only thing is, I don't understand why nobody has caught her yet.
Well, yeah, that too.
Because she's just doing everything...
I'm surprised she's still even working at CTU after everything she's done. Like, and, well, I mean, that goes to my other criticism, which is Hastings is a horrible CTU head.
Yeah, I thought that at the beginning, too, because it made me miss Buchanan. Buchanan has been the head of CTU for, like, 3 seasons.
Yeah, and no one can beat Buchanan.
Yeah, he was fantastic. And yeah. He was by far my favorite CTU boss.
Yeah.
Because he didn't take crap from anybody. He always knew what was going on. And you could trust him. And Hastings comes off as incompetent to me. And,
Well, Hastings always seems to make the wrong decision regardless of what his mind happens to be.
Right.
It's like he finally changes his mind on Chloe and then makes the wrong decision with her.
Yeah, and it's just really, really painful to watch right now. And I hate to see a good show go out. Like, this is the last season and you're going to go out at the bottom.
Honestly, they've been treading water for, like, the last 2 seasons anyway.
That's true, but you would hope that if they knew that this was the last season, that they'd pull out all the stops and end well, and that's not what they're doing.
Well, I think that's the reason that we're still watching it, is because we're still hoping that they're going to do a 180 on us at some point. That some amazing twist is going to happen that's going to turn this show on its head and make it incredible again.
Yeah, no. I don't think so.
I don't think it's happening, though, but I think a lot of us still live in hope.
Well, I think the only reason at this point I'm watching is that it's the last season, and I'm like, I've watched all of 24 to this point. I can't imagine just not finishing it. But it's becoming a serious chore. Like, it is literally the last thing I watch on my TiVo at this point. And I don't want to talk about the show anymore. Because I'm like, if all I have to say is something negative, you know, then, yeah. And usually my perspective on people is, if all they have to say is something negative about a show, stop watching it. And yeah. I would like to follow my own advice, but, yeah. So I'm going to...
I just can't. Like, I'm not liking this season at all, and yet I can't stop watching. Yeah, it's a horrible sickness.
Yes, and I think I have the same one. Let's get on to something that was good. Okay. Let's move on to Chuck.
Oh, yeah.
Brian, you watch Chuck, right?
Yeah, no, I do not.
Good Lord, man.
Oh, dude.
Well, we'll get to Castle in a minute. All right, so...
No worries.
Chuck was pretty good this week. The only bad thing that I do have to say about the show is Sarah, she came off to me as a hypocrite this week because...
But she's been coming off to me as a hypocrite since... for like 2 episodes now.
Well, yeah, but this one it was more blatant.
It was definitely more blatant this time.
It was just like, and it actually made me angry, because her whole thing is she's training him to be a spy. She's his instructor. She's the one who gave him the mission, the red mission, to kill the agent.
Yeah.
She's been leading him down this road for 3 seasons. And then when he actually...
He finally does it.
Yeah, and she's like, well, I can't be with you anymore.
I say that in air quotes, does it.
Yes. So then he finally kills somebody. Yeah, quotes. Then she's like, you know, I'm done. And I can't... Because their whole thing is the romance between them, and I actually do like them together, but now I don't. I'm like, if her thing is you can't actually be a spy while you're with me, then...
But yet you being a spy is the only way we can be together?
Yeah. Like, make up your mind.
It makes no sense.
And then her thing is, okay, I can't be with you, but I'll be with Superman guy. What is his name? Shaw? I'll be with Shaw, who is a much bigger killer, cold-blooded killer than Chuck ever was, but she could be with him. And then the second she finds out that Chuck didn't actually kill anybody, she's like, oh, I can be with you now. I'm like, are you kidding me? No. Yeah. I would be like, I don't want
that
you.
That was a bit much, and... What I am curious about now is how they ended it, how they're going to handle that with the big reveal.
The big reveal. With her killing Shaw. Yeah.
I don't know if I want to say too much about that, if I want to spoil it.
No, if it's aired, you can say it, so...
Okay. All right, well then, in her red mission, it turns out that Sarah's first kill was Shaw's wife.
Right.
And I'm like,
plane!
What's that?
I said, plane! Somebody has an airplane flying over them.
Yeah, that would be me. My apartment is in the flight path of Burbank Airport.
Yeah, and I'm not that far from you because now the plane's flying over me.
So we find out that Sarah has killed Shaw's wife, and he finds out from the guy from The Ring, Mark Sheppard, who I think has a contractual obligation to be in every genre show ever.
I have noticed that. Yeah.
Battlestar Galactica, Firefly, now Castle, Leverage. Like, he's in freaking everything.
Oh, yeah, and Chuck. Yeah.
And Chuck, yeah.
Oh, and he was in Terminator or something. No, wait. Yes. No.
Was he?
He was in some other show that it was a conspiracy, and I can't remember what it was now. It's blanking. But yes, he's in everything.
It's like he just needs to be in V and Lost now, and he's done it all.
Oh, he probably will be in V, actually. I bet money. He might not make Lost before the end, but he will definitely be in V. Yeah.
If V lasts that long.
We're not on V yet.
Okay.
Chuck, I thought it was a good episode other than it made me dislike Sarah.
Yeah, that's true. And
so if she gets killed, I'm kind of like, I don't...
Sarah's going to need to do a lot to redeem herself.
Yes. But the thing also is, I don't think she realizes that she's wrong. Like, she doesn't... There's a difference between somebody realizing, you know, I've done wrong and I need to redeem myself, and she just really doesn't even consider what she's doing is wrong. So... I don't have great hopes.
And you see, this is the thing that bugs me. Is like, Chuck has not pointed out this hypocrisy to her.
Right.
Which I'm like, Chuck is a smart guy. It's like, why is he not telling her, listen, you realize that you're totally contradicting yourself by behaving this way.
Right. He's just figuring out, I'll just do what you want me to do. And I'm like, dude, grow some balls. I'm sorry. That bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
But even though with all the negative, I love Chuck. I love the storylines they have going on. I like where the show is going. And yeah. I'm really happy with the direction of the show.
The two guys from the Buy More, I can't remember their names.
Jeff and Lester, correct.
I like them, and I like how they've been expanding on their characters, especially this last episode.
They are very creepy.
They are creepy, but it's like the funny kind of creepy, not the oh my god, keep them away from me creepy.
That is true.
Where they just like make your skin crawl as soon as you see them. It's like, oh, it's the cute little creepy guys.
That is a very good assessment of them. All right, let's move on to Castle. Brian, you get the first plug.
Do it.
Plug? What plug?
Not plug, but say.
I really liked it. It was great. I had a lot of fun with it. Fun episode. A little predictable, I thought, but still very enjoyable.
Well, it was slightly anticlimactic with, they resolved the whole...
It really was. Yeah. It was,
but I actually liked that it was anticlimactic that way, because what they were doing was they were trying to show this line between fact and fiction, where in fiction you have the big shootout, and in reality... You probably have something that's a little bit more anticlimactic like that.
Well, actually, what I was talking about was the bomb in Kate's apartment, and then she's in the bathtub.
Yeah, but I knew that's how they were... we all knew she was going to survive.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, obviously.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I figured if they were going to come up with some way for her to survive, at least this one was feasible.
I suppose. Yeah. It just... I that was a little, I don't know, I guess I expected a little more, or that tension to last a little longer, because that's resolved in like the first 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, but they had to get through so much else in the episode.
Yeah, and I liked...
Yeah, it did feel a little rushed, honestly. But it was good, but yeah, it felt a tiny bit rushed.
Yeah, I still really like the relationship between Beckett and Castle.
Oh, yeah.
That is definitely the highlight of the show. And Delaney was an interesting mix. The only thing that actually bothered me was, okay, they break out Delaney's character because she's all tied up. And Kate distracts the bad guy. She runs after the bad guy. And Castle frees Delaney, right? Now, Delaney's the cop. And instead of being the cop and backing up another cop, she tells Castle, oh, give her backup. I'll take care of this phone call. I'm like, are you kidding me? Why would you send a guy?
Spider-Man, you take care of the phone call. I'll take care of the bad guy.
Exactly. I thought that was completely unrealistic. Like,
well,
that...
I think they had to do that to set up the Firefly reference line.
Well, yeah.
Okay, I missed the Firefly reference line. Go ahead.
Oh, when he shoots the gun out of his hand. When Castle shoots the gun out of the guy's hand, and Beckett says, good shot. He says, I was aiming for his head.
Yeah, that's from The Train Job.
Oh. I didn't remember that.
Jane says that line in the show, in Firefly.
Oh, okay.
So it was a total Firefly reference. Yeah, it was great.
Well, I understand what you're saying. And they did it also to have them have, you know, a more bond together and stuff like that. I get that, but it just... That struck me, like, while I was watching the episode, I was like, why would she send the guy with no training to back up a cop in a shootout? I was like, that makes no sense. So, it bugged. It bugged me a little bit.
To me, the show is...
No, go ahead, Brian.
To me, the show is nowhere near close to reality that it didn't even bug me. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever, it's just Castle. Yeah. It's, like, nowhere near reality at all for me. So, it didn't even faze me.
That's true. Castle does not pretend to be a reality-based show. That is true.
Totally. And I'm okay with that. It's because Castle and Beckett are so good together.
I'm not going to argue that. I enjoy watching them and their chemistry. So, I'll give you that. It just, like I said, that one little thing just bugged me and it threw me out of the story. And whenever anything throws me out of the story, I have to at least comment.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Fair enough. Totally fair enough. Yeah, I do the same thing.
All right. Now we're on to V, and Brian has a V comment, so go ahead with your V rant.
Okay, I am liking this show less and less with every episode. I think the writing is so bad, it's making even good actors and actresses look like hacks. And I think, as I said earlier, they've done the impossible job of making Marina Baccarin unattractive.
Are you talking about the very last shot?
No, not even that. The whole episode. It's like the camera is too close to her. It's at an off angle. They make her head look too big or her eyes look too big.
The hairstyle ain't working for me either.
You know, I'm fine with it. At first, I was like, what? But she's so goddamn gorgeous that, you know, it works for me. I prefer her with the long hair, but I wouldn't kick her out of bed for having short hair, let me just say. But,
okay, I'll give you that one.
But yeah, they've done such an amazing job of just making her unappealing, which is like, okay, this is really science fiction. If you can make Miranda Baccarin unappealing,
well,
this is totally outside of reality.
Like, with the character of Anna, she's just so stoic, and that's kind of the part that bugs me, because Diana in the original V wasn't like that. I mean, she was hardcore. She was like, she was someone on a mission.
Yeah, she was a hardcore, you know, B-word. And, you know, you were like, oh my God, she's freaking evil.
Yeah.
With Anna, you're just
you don't get that with Anna. You get like, okay, she's some sort of manipulator.
Yeah, but she was also, I have to say, she's also really creepy to me. I get freaked out by the looks. That you're saying she's cold and distant, but the way she looks at people, it always makes me feel like she's like measuring you up for a grill, and she's thinking about if your arm would be succulent, you know. So I always get a really creepy feeling.
That could be, and I definitely do see that, but I don't get creeped out by it. I just am sort of like that's part of what they are as a species. All of them are sizing us up as food.
Right, but I mean, I really see that when I'm looking at her. Like, the way she looks at people, I really get that feeling very, very distinctly. Mm-hmm. But I am enjoying the show. I'm having the opposite reaction of Brian. I'm enjoying the show more. I'm enjoying the storyline. I like the fact they now have someone who is going to train them to actually... You know, that's going to train them to use their military arms and stuff like that. So I really find that interesting. And I want to see where they're going with their building their resistance.
Yeah, I'm actually more intrigued by the Resistance storyline than I am with the V storyline.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like all they're doing is kind of biding their time until the major fleet comes.
Right.
And the Resistance...
Well, except for now that they're building their army, the whole army that Anna is breeding.
Yeah, which means are we going to have to see Marina, like, mega pregnant or something?
I get the feeling, based on the fact that she ate the guy, I have a feeling it's going to be quick.
Probably.
Let's end V right there and let's move on to Modern Family. Since I don't actually watch this show, I mean, I saw the pilot, but other than that, that's all I have. So you guys go ahead and hit me with Modern Family. Why should I be watching this show?
It's fun.
That's all. It's smartly written. It's smartly written. It's very funny. The characters are very approachable. You can really believe that they actually exist. And you can actually believe that there are people like this. You can see people like this in your life. You can see people like this in other people's families. You actually believe that a family like this could easily exist somewhere. It's very believable.
Yeah, that's what I like about them. It's like they're dysfunctional, but not on like such a level that they hate each other. Like they have conflicts. They have personality conflicts for sure, but they always seem to at least try to get along.
Right. Like this week's episode had Phil had for an iPad. Right. Yeah. And I totally believed it because my girlfriend is also dying for an iPad, and it was like Phil was channeling her, or vice versa. It was just totally, totally believable. And it was really cute how, like, Claire and the rest of the family bounded together to get him the iPad. And, like, the whole episode she's telling Luke to stop lying, but his lying got the iPad in the end. It's just very well crafted. As well, like these things that seem disparate at different parts of the episode kind of come in at the end, and you're like, oh, that's why they kept harping on that.
That's true, yeah. And,
yeah.
Like, I loved how everything came together at the end, and they were finally able to get him the iPad, and I am so amused by Phil. Like,
I know.
Phil is quickly becoming my favorite character, just because he is so goofy and so out there. Like, he's like a real-life Homer Simpson.
I know, like, he annoyed me at first, but he's really growing on me. Like, I love this week, like, when he just gave up. Like, when he got home, and he was like, and his daughter was like, oh, someone dropped the cake, but someone else is cleaning it up. He won't.
He just comes in totally despondent. He's like...
Totally despondent, like, he doesn't care.
Dad, my life is horrible now.
Hey, mom's still looking for the iPad. She won't find it. So, like,
and then at the very end, he's like, the wife walks past him and he's playing with the iPad and he's like, I love you. Oh, I love you too, honey. He's like, oh, right, good night. Don't worry, iPad, she'll never know.
Oh my god. And the whole thing with Maria and Manny and Chess. Oh my god, that was fantastic.
what I love was like how they're having this like chess throwdown on Phil's birthday present chess set.
You can open it later. We gotta go. We gotta do this.
Like, we got you a chess set, but we gotta open it now. We need to play this. We need to settle this once and for all. And then at the end when Maria finally just like knocks all the pieces over and he's like,
yeah.
Oh great, thank you for throwing my birthday present all over the floor.
Exactly. Can you guys hear me now still?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, good. I got a little thing, making sure. great episode. The show is just getting better with every episode.
It really is, which is why I was really glad to see it get the Peabody and get recognized for very, very true, very honest depictions of a mildly dysfunctional, wacky family.
Exactly. Like, they could have made, you know, the homosexual couple much more stereotypical, but they didn't. Yeah, they made them real.
At the beginning, I thought Cameron and Mitchell were felt very stereotypical, but as the show goes on, they really sort of fleshed out their personalities into two very unique guys.
Exactly. Like Maria, she could have totally been just the trophy, you know, the stereotypical trophy wife.
Yeah.
Oh, she's this beautiful woman, but she also has a personality. She has texture. And they just do a wonderful job with that.
Yeah. And it's the same with, like, all the kids, too. Like, they all start as what could be just stereotypes, but they just add little details and little twists to them that make them unique.
Well, exactly.
I'm gonna call it on this, and you guys have done a very good job, and I will now at least watch another. I mean, I'll set my TiVo to watch this stuff and see if they're, you know, I don't watch a lot of comedy, so it's a hard sell for me, but it does sound interesting, and I did enjoy the pilot. But I want to spend a couple minutes talking about, I actually don't want to talk about Flash Forward, because all I'm going to say is negative stuff, and we're getting close on time, so unless you have something you really want to talk about, Josh, for Flash Forward.
Not particularly, no.
Yeah, it was kind of a blah episode, except the Somalia stuff was halfway interesting, but other than that, it was like,
Yeah, the way it ended, I was like, whatever.
Let's move on to some good stuff, which is Fringe came back. It came back from break for, like, what, a couple of months, and it came back strong with a very big arc episode. Did you guys watch Fringe?
I'm one of those people who gave up on Fringe a few episodes into it and never got back on board, and now I feel like I really need to.
Well, I can't actually blame you, because I did the same thing, and it wasn't until the end of season one, and I had nothing to watch over the summer, that I got back into the show. But it's a weird mix. It's like, whenever they do an arc episode, it's fantastic, and whenever they do a standalone episode, it's okay. So your quality goes up and down, but this was a
like X-Files.
Yes, but X-Files actually usually had pretty good standalones. Like, some of their standalones were actually pretty good. This show, not so much. Yeah. But I have to say, though, this was a huge arc episode. It's what you'd been waiting for. As soon as you knew there was an arc, this was the episode you've been waiting for. And it basically gave the history, because I don't know if you know anything about the arc, but without giving too much away, the main arc is that there are parallel worlds, and
I knew there was something about a parallel world, and that's about it.
Right, and there's one particular parallel world that is kind of their enemy, and they've been trying to destroy each other, and you don't really know why, or what started the war, or what's going on, and this episode shows the very first time they made contact between the worlds, and you understand why we're kind of the bad guys. Like, our world is sort of the villains in this story. And so you understand why the other parallel world wants to destroy us. Because now that we've actually made contact and we've broken the barrier between the two worlds, now only one of our worlds can exist. Because we're moving, every time somebody goes back and forth, the two worlds move closer and closer together. And it's going to be a point where only one of the worlds can exist, and the other one has to be destroyed. And so you know, we started it. And we got to have a flashback, and they did a really good job. The guy who plays Walter, he's an older actor. He's the guy from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, John Noble, yeah.
Right. And they did a really good job with making him look about 20 or 30 years younger. They did a combination of makeup and CGI, and they gave him a kind of a goofy wig, but they removed a lot of his wrinkles and stuff, and it looks really good. He really does look younger.
What they did in X-Men 3?
Yeah, but I mean, it's on a TV show, it's much more impressive, and it looks better. Like, X-Men 3, you could see the CGI. Yeah. On this, you can tell that they've done something, but you can't quite tell what. And so it's much more subtle, and it's done in a better way. And you see the very first volley in this war, which, to be honest, is more of a personal, emotional thing than an actual, we declare war against you. And I'm trying to be subtle because if you are planning on watching the show, it's a huge, it's the huge reveal at the end of season one. So I don't want to tell you exactly. Okay. But
well, I think I'm definitely gonna have to pick this up again and.
Blast. Yeah, I might have to as well. Yeah.
Yeah, their arc episodes are incredible. I mean, they're really, really good. The only time I groan is when they have some boring standalone that I've already seen the episode on the X-Files. So it's like, I've seen this X-Files episode. But I have to say, especially once you get to second season, even the standalones, the characters are so much fun that you don't mind. So.
Well, that's what made the standalones and X-Files so good.
Yeah. Well, this one, I personally think that Walter and Peter, who are the father and son on the show, their interaction is so entertaining that you don't care what else is going on. I'm one of the people, though, that really don't like Olivia Dunham, who's the blonde police. Yeah. Oh, she's FBI. I really don't like her. But everything else about the show is so good. And she actually has her moments when... Mm-hmm. I call it her superpowers. When she shows her superpowers, she's okay. Great. It's just when she's just being a regular FBI agent that I'm like, she's so bland, you know. But okay. The show, I think, it came back really strong. The premiere, spring premiere was really, really good. The next show, let's move on to everyone's favorite, which is Supernatural.
Yay,
so that all three of us watch. Don't everyone speak at once. Go
all
ahead.
All three of us watch this one. So who wants to start?
Go ahead, Brian.
Okay, I'll start. Oh, I loved it. I thought this week's episode was great.
I agree. Totally agree. It was fantastic. It was off the hook.
It was what I was hoping it would be, and then some.
Agreed. Totally agree.
Well, I have to say, though, I feel like each week they're trying to move me closer and closer to suicide.
Yeah, right.
I'm like, can I slip my wrist now, please?
Well, it's the apocalypse. It's not happy, shiny, and bunnies. I mean...
Well, why not? I want a happy, shiny apocalypse.
Sorry, that's not how it works. And I was surprised, too, because the writers for this particular episode, I forget their names, but their episodes are usually a little on the weak side. Yeah. So... I was really surprised at how strong this episode was. It's like they need to write a bunch of episodes to really get a feel for the characters and the universe, and they finally have.
Right.
It felt like that with this week.
Well, I have to say right off the bat, one of the things I love so much about this episode, and I think we can agree on this, Ash was back.
Woo! I love Ash.
Ash for another episode.
Yeah, business in the front and party in the back.
and his heaven was the roadhouse. That was awesome.
What I love about Ash is, like, he's dead and he's hacking heaven. Like, how awesome is he?
And he can read a Nokian on his laptop. It's like, wow. Yeah, that is great.
Yeah, the only thing is, you know, at the end when the guys are like, you know, they give Cass the message that God is like, leave me alone. I have to say, as depressed and as upset as they were, I was like, look, God saved you from Lucifer. He pulled you out of the plane, you know, put you on the plane. He saved Castiel's life. He brought you to heaven when you got killed. It's not like he's not doing stuff, but they act like because he won't interfere with the apocalypse that means that he's not there, you know, basically not a good God. And I'm like, you don't know the big picture. You don't know what else is going on. There might be a reason that God wants the apocalypse to happen.
Well, I don't know if it's that. I think it's more like they were extremely disappointed because they hoped he would help and he didn't.
But he does help. He has helped them.
Right, but they were hoping for a different outcome. And now they don't have that light to go toward anymore
Now, because as Dean said, appealing to God was basically the last effort of a dying man. This was their last hope for anything.
Exactly. And now they don't have a direction. They don't know what to do.
They're rudderless now.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. They don't know where to go. They don't know what to do. They're lost. And we don't know if they've even lost Bobby. He might have pulled out from the team. We don't know based on last week's episode.
Honestly, if Bobby were to give up on them, I would not blame him.
I don't blame him either. And that's the saddest thing about that, is that I would not blame him either. And if they lose him, that's even less of the rudder that they have. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's setting up something, and I don't know what, but I am just...
Well, you know. What I found interesting was when they were in heaven, mm-hmm. and they actually asked Ash if he ever found a Big John, and he hadn't.
Big that John? Who's Big John? I forgot.
John Winchester, their dad.
Oh, well, that's because he's not in heaven.
Yeah, he is. He went to heaven at the very end.
We're not sure about that. He just faded off.
Right. He didn't go to heaven. That's not the impression I got.
We don't really know where he went. So he could be in heaven, but we don't know.
But I like that he's not in heaven, which means he's out there somewhere.
Okay.
Well, if I may say something, I saw Jeffrey Dean Morgan at the at a panel yesterday for The Losers, which it looks amazing, by the way. And someone asked him about that. Someone asked if he would come back to Supernatural. And he said, you know, if they called him back for the seventh season, I mean the last season, he would love to do it. But they haven't yet. He doesn't really know what's going on over there, but he would love to do it.
I don't think they do either, because I think they were sort of under the impression that this would be their last season, and now it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they also, they're already finished shooting, so, yeah, it's done. This season's done shooting.
Exactly. So, yeah, he said he's not sure what's going on, but if they called him back for whatever the last whatever they needed, he would do it if he could.
Okay.
So, you know, that's good. And someone asked him last year if everything he's in involves him dying. and that same person asked him the same question this year, and he said, no, maybe. I don't think so, no.
Well, he was in a romantic comedy at one point, and he didn't die in that.
Yeah, yeah, but he was really funny about it.
All right, let's crank on through. Stargate Universe premiered on Friday, so I don't know if you guys... I know that Josh watches it, right?
Yeah, I watched it.
I do not.
I had mixed feelings about this episode because it was finally like their first real alien encounter.
Right.
And it seemed it was really hard to understand like what it was all about.
Well, the thing is, because we don't know anything about the aliens, we can barely communicate with them. We don't really know what they want. We know that they've captured our people, but that's pretty much all we know. And then the only person who gives us any insight at the end is Rush, and he lies, like, all the time.
Yeah.
So...
But, you know, that's what I like about Rush, is, like, Rush is the guy who seems to know everything anyway.
Yeah, but then he lies about it so much.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like, yes, he knows everything, but what are the odds of him actually telling you?
I feel like this whole, like, tacit Cold War between Rush and the Colonel is going to get really old really fast.
I think it's going to get really ugly really fast.
It's probably going to get really ugly, and, like, honestly, I really don't care who wins. I would kind of prefer that Rush wins because I think he would ultimately be a more interesting leader.
Well, I mean, interesting if you want the bad guy to win, because there's no way that Rush cares. My problem with Rush being the leader is he cares about himself, and that's it. You can't have a leader like that being in charge of a large group of people and supposedly caring about their welfare, because he doesn't.
That's true, but I wouldn't say that Rush cares about himself as much as he cares about the technology.
Well, I mean, he cares about his own goals and what he's trying to do, but he doesn't care about anything else. Every single one of them could die. Mm-hmm. You know, every single person on that ship could die, and he wouldn't care as long as he was doing what he was trying to do. So to me, I would not want him as my leader. He's way too selfish. And
probably, but on the flip side, you've got the Colonel, whose name I cannot remember to save my life.
Young,
Colonel Young, right. On the other side, you've got Colonel Young, who is really kind of a pansy.
What do you mean? I don't think so.
He's blinded by just trying to get home that he's not willing to even, like, look out a window.
Well, I mean, his thing is he's trying so hard to make sure that his people are safe and alive. He doesn't want to take the crazy risks that Rush wants to take. Rush was like, let's go blow up this other thing over here and see what happens. I agree with Young, though. I totally agree with what Young is doing.
But the two of them are like the extremes of the side. Rush is the let's go exploring and to hell with the consequences, and Young is let's keep our heads down and get home.
Well, and, I mean, but the like, thing is that's the priority, though. If you think about it, the mission is to get home. The mission isn't necessarily to explore. They're not on an exploratory mission. That's not what they're supposed to be doing. They accidentally ended up there. And so if his mission is to get home and that's it, that's correct. I don't have a problem with that at all.
I'd just kill them both and make Eli in charge.
Eli would crack under the pressure. Eli couldn't take the pressure of replacing Rush. There's no way he could take the pressure of doing Rush and Young. He can't. And apparently...
But it would make the show hilarious.
Well, that's true. He would be funny. But he would have no idea what he would do, and he would crack under the pressure. I think... I like Young a lot better than his second-in-command. The kid, I forgot his name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that guy is Mr. Bland.
Mr. Pretty Boy and nothing else.
Yeah, he has no depth. I like the black dude. I can't think of his name. I like him just because he's like, let's shoot them all and see what happens.
Yeah. Kill them all, let God sort them out.
Yeah, I like his attitude, and he's more than tempted to just kill Rush. He's like, can I shoot him? Are you sure I can't shoot him? Please, can I shoot him?
Yeah.
You know, so...
I do like him, but he's been toned down a little bit the last few episodes.
Yeah, because he understands that Rush actually is probably going to save their lives, so he's toning it down.
Yeah.
Let me go into Spartacus real quick, unless you have any more comments about Stargate.
I have no more comments about Stargate. I'm good.
All right. I know I'm the only one who watches Spartacus, and each week I swear I will give you a plug.
Okay, sell me on Spartacus, Dan.
Sell me on Softpornicus.
Softpornicus. Well, I actually just read an article by Steve DeKnight, and he was actually talking about the reason that the first few episodes were the way they were. And he said, because normally you get a pilot, and then you sit back and you wait to review the pilot, and you get feedback, and then like 6 months later, they're like, okay, you can go to series. And in that time, you've reworked your ideas and figured out exactly what you want and stuff like that. He said, but this show, it got picked up for 13 episodes, period, like from the bat. And so they started from the pilot and just kept going. And so it took them a little longer to get their footing. So he said that in the first episode, they overshot the blood and the nudity and the language and stuff. He was like, they went overboard. But if you think about shooting and then looking at the dailies, and then by the time the cut is done, they've already filmed like 3 more episodes.
Well, at least he admits that they went overboard.
Oh, yeah. He's like, we overshot. He said he was going for the 300 look, and that's kind of what he wanted, a comic book kind of thing. And he's like, they overshot it. And by the time they get to episode 4 or 5, he's like, they're starting. He's like, that's kind of the show that he wanted. And that's about when I think the show got good. Like, the first few episodes were...
they were almost unbearable.
And I have to say, I mean, well, I was watching it for eye candy. That was all I was watching it for. I was like, all right, I'll put this on. These guys are pretty. I'm not ashamed to say that I'm watching the show for the pretty.
Honestly, like, even a naked Lucy Lawless was not enough to keep me watching.
And I understand that. I mean, I was like, like I said... There's a difference between, this is like the only show that's on television where they actually have men running around mostly naked. So yeah. I don't have like a lot of different options. So I was like, all right, let's watch this. And it wasn't really that good. It wasn't that engaging. And I was kind of bored. Up until they actually started doing really surprising things. They killed characters that you did not see coming. I was like, this plot with... the wife, like, his wife gets kidnapped, and he's making a deal with Badiatis to try to get his wife back and all that. I really thought that storyline was going to be the storyline that led us for the entire season. And no, it's not. Like, they totally go in a different direction. And the plot, they had this huge episode that Spartacus was going to fight this unbeatable villain in the arena, and they were doing all this training to teach him how to fight this guy. And I was like, well, of course he's going to win. He's freaking Spartacus. He's the star of the show and whatever. And it did not go the way I thought it was going to go. Like, every time I thought that I knew exactly what was going to happen, that's not what happened. And I had to remember, like, I was, like, stunned by it, by, like, episode 6 or 7. I was like, what the heck? And then I remembered that it's the Steve DeKnight show, who's a Buffy and Angel writer. Right. And it's not like he's a unknown writing hack. He actually has ability, and he...
And that's what I found so disappointing when I was watching the first couple of episodes, because I was like, this is Steve DeKnight. This is from the school of Joss Whedon.
Oh, and, but it totally...
much better than this.
It totally shows later. I'm like, the episode 10 was devastating. Like, I was crying like a baby watching that episode. Huh. Like, it's unbelievable. And then this week's episode was not as good as last week's, but it was more about... It was flashbacks, because like Spartacus is sick, and so he's having these like hallucinations. But the hallucinations, what they do is all the clues about stuff that's happened kind of come to him in the hallucination, and he makes a huge realization. And I was like, whoa! Like, I kind of figured that might happen at some point, but I didn't think it was all gonna happen in like a fevered dream kind of deal. Like, he literally put together the clues, and then he asked the right question to the right person, and he got an answer. I was like, oh, this can't be good. And then the political machinations of Badiatis, he basically is a trip, because it's like, if someone insults him, he will kill you. And this one guy insulted him, and he's a magistrate, which means that he's really, really high ranking. And there's really no... He's so far above Badiatis' status that Badiatis should not even thought about doing anything to this guy. It should not have even occurred to him. But the guy looked down on him. But the guy looked down on him, and Badiatis was like, I'm going to have to kill him. And I was like, seriously? And the way he did it was fantastic. It was one of those things where, like, halfway through... I had a passing thought that he might do something, but I was like, nah, that's too complicated. And that's exactly what he did. I was like, oh my God, you know, it was really good. It was really good.
Okay.
You have to get past, I'd say up to episode 4 or 5, they start introducing the actual plot. The first few episodes don't really have a plot. The first few episodes are, hey, look at the pretty people that are naked having sex. That's kind of what it is, but once you get into the story, I think it's past the episode called The Pit. The Pit is the last really bad episode. I actually had a really hard time watching that episode. It was awful.
Okay.
But then after that, they start a story, and I think the one that really grabbed me was when they fight that guy in the arena. Like, they're like, you have to fight such and such, the undefeated whoever. And after that, I was like, I'm in. So that was it. All right, I'm done.
I think I was in when you said "Make It Lucy Lawless." I don't know about that, so I'm gonna have to definitely check this out now.
It's in the second episode, and it was nice, but at the same time, I'm like, I still can't keep watching this.
But that's the second episode. I'm saying once you get, she's naked later on, and the storyline is actually really good, and she has this fantastic moment where she's really upset, and you know, like, her hair color changes like every episode. She's blonde and then she's a redhead, and it's a wig. And there's this one moment where she's so upset, she's ripped her wig off, and you just see her like with her hair all plastered down, and she's crying, so all her makeup is all smeared, and she looks a little crazy, and she's flipping out, and I was like, whoa. You know,
well, if anybody can pull that off, it's Lucy Lawless.
Yeah, and it's good. I mean, they actually, that's what I'm saying. It's like, once the storyline kicks in and they start the plots, it's really good.
Okay. All right, you've convinced me. I'm going to give it another go.
Yay. Yeah, Netflix.
I'll check it out.
Netflix instant. All right, Brian, this is the last thing we have on the schedule, which is, without spoilers, talk about Doctor Who for us.
Okay, well, they had a screen, three screens. It originally was one, but they added two more because of the demand. And they were all full of at least 1,000 people. And, you know, I was hopeful because, you know, I love Stephen Moffat and he loves Doctor Who, so I was hopeful. Had tried to keep my expectations low, and I was blown away. Absolutely blown away. Within 5 minutes, I was convinced that Matt Smith is the Doctor, without question.
Good.
It was a great episode. It was funny. It was tense. And Matt Smith, he totally impressed me. I've never seen him in anything else before, and I'm totally buying him as the Doctor now. Completely.
Okay. How do you feel about Karen Gillan, the companion?
She was pretty funny. I don't want to say anything else, really. Okay. But she's funny and enjoyable, but I actually don't like the character that much. They kind of made her a little unlikable, and I like that. Because I like Rose and I like Martha and I like Donna, so I'm not totally on board with this new with Amy, or what I think that's her name.
Yeah,
and,
Amy.
I'm not totally on board with her, but I like that. You know, I like that they made her a little.
But a lot of people weren't on board with Donna either. So
yeah, that's true.
I know a lot of people really didn't like her in The Runaway Bride, and then she came back in series 4 and.
Yeah. Yeah.
It became, in my opinion, the best companion ever.
Yeah, well, exactly. We'll fight about the best companion later, because I have a different opinion.
Of course you do. We know your opinion. But yeah, I mean, when you guys finally see it on, I think it's the 17th, when it comes on BBC America,
right.
I think you'll be impressed, because I did not hear in that whole room with 1,000 people, when the credits started and Matt Smith came up, no one really applauded, and the girl came up. Karen, I think her name is. No one really applauded. Yeah. And then when Stephen Moffat came up as the writer for the episode, people applauded. And yeah. Within 5 minutes, people were applauding, cheering, laughing. So I think everyone else was won over as well.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear it.
And the episode also sets up the arc for the season, too.
Okay.
So it sets up the new episode. It sets up the new Doctor and kind of the arc, kind of the foreshadowing for the rest of the season. So it was really well done.
All right, that's great. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Yeah,
I was being cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, so. Me too. I was watching a lot of previews. Like when I first heard about Matt Smith and first saw him, I was like, "Who the hell is this guy?"
Yeah, exactly.
And I was, but the more I saw, the more, because they had like a whole bunch of previews come out like all at once a couple weeks ago, and every clip I saw was like getting more and more convinced. I think he can pull it off. But they didn't really show too much of the companion, so I didn't really know what to make of her.
Well, I think everyone's been concentrating on, can this guy be the Doctor? And then you worry about, is the companion good? You know, like,
yeah,
the priority is the Doctor, because I feel like if the companion sucks, she can fall out of the TARDIS, it's fine. You know, it's like, he can get another companion if the companion doesn't work out, but if the Doctor doesn't work out, it's bigger tragedy.
Right.
Right, exactly.
I knew they redesigned the TARDIS. How did it look?
I liked it. It looked a little steampunkish, honestly.
Cool.
Yeah, and they kind of gave hints that we might see more of the inside of it, which I kind of hope is true, because I would love to see more of the inside of it.
Yeah, that is one thing in the new Who. We haven't, like, other than the control room, that's it. I mean, they insinuate that there are other areas for them to go, but we've never seen any other space.
Wardrobe.
Yeah, we saw a little bit of the wardrobe.
Oh, that's right.
But that's it, really. And
yeah, we don't really see much else.
Yeah, I'd love to actually explore the TARDIS. That would be great.
Yeah, but I like the new look of it, and I liked everything pretty much. I want to see it more and more now.
All right.
Cool.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up this podcast. We're over the mark, I think. But if you guys have any comments, remember that you can email us at tvcampfire@gmail.com. And I'll see you guys next week. Say goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.